Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Retail Refined, a market scale podcast with your host, me, Melissa Gonzalez. Today, I'm excited to introduce you to Sarah Davis, if you don't know her already, who is the founder and president of Fashion File. Now, her story started a way back, even though you're probably seeing her and Fashion File a lot more in the news today. She started the company as an ultra-luxury resale company, as an eBay storefront back in 1999 when she discovered that luxury handbags and accessories sold faster and held their value in the secondary market more than any other category. Fast forward to today, and Fashion File is now one of the largest online platforms for buying and selling ultra-luxury handbags and accessories in the country. So she has learned so much from what started as a startup to now, which is a national luxury reseller headquartered in San Diego and New York City with offices in Tokyo, Japan, and retail locations across the country. So there's going to be a lot to learn from her, a lot to dig in on. So we're going to start with some of the origin, but also the future. Before I do that, Sarah, thank you so much for being on with us today. And why don't you introduce yourself a little bit further to the audience?
It's interesting because I started out, my retail experience before Fashion File was like working at the Gap when I was in high school. Like I went to law school and then really started eBay, started selling on eBay. Fashion File was my user ID on eBay. Like that's where the name came from. And so like, that's kind of, I didn't go to business school. I went to law school but I was fascinated again from the early time as a shopper. Honestly, like I love resale shopping. Like I've always loved a vintage shop. I've always loved like a cool, quirky thrift store in town. Like that's just always been my favorite go-to. And so I was fascinated like when eBay in 1995 came out with just this new way of selling online. Nothing like it had ever existed before. It was literally your mom and pop consignment shop in your hometown. And the idea, again, in those early days of the internet, there was no, like, you couldn't process a credit card online. So it was very different, the experience. If you bought something from me on eBay in those early days, you mailed me a check, you know? And then I'd deposit it and wait for it to clear the bank. And then I'd like send you your item. It was very strange, but nobody could process a credit card during those early days. So I just came, and so basically from there grew this digital company. And so it's interesting because I have in the last few years, you know, in the last probably, you know, 5 to 10 years, have really doubled down on the fact that the luxury customer wants so much more than just a digital experience. And what does that look like? And really the more investments we've made in just to meeting the customer where she or he, where they are, that just pays back in spades. So the company, like every couple years, just looks different than it did the few years before. It still feels like Fashion File, but it's kind of like in today's environment, if you're not evolving and growing, then, you know, you're in trouble. And we've seen a lot of companies not make it because they haven't grown with the customer who's evolving.
Well, on that note, you know, resale was kind of niche back when you first started, right? And now it's a mainstream part of luxury conversations. And I don't think that's going to change to your point. And we look at Generation Z and Alpha and, you know, their awareness around sustainability and all of those things as well. And, you know, how do you think that this customer perception, the role that it's played and also shaping Fashion File alongside, you know, your vision, and what do you see that being for forward?
Oh, it's so honestly exciting. I am thrilled because when I was of the age of the Gen Alpha or, you know, both boys so long ago. And if you said to me, oh my gosh, Sarah, I love your jacket and I got it at Salvation Army, I was going to say, thank you. Isn't it cute? And I just wouldn't say where I got it. It was not a flex. It was not a flex. It was, I grew up without, you know, I like made my own money. My parents didn't give me school, you know, school clothes, shopping money. So I had to buy my own clothes. So if you do that and you love fashion and you want to wear, you know, what you care about, what you're wearing, you shop secondhand. And back in the old days, that was not cool. And honestly, not like I would lie, but I'd be like, love your jacket. I'd be like, thank you. You know, I wouldn't be like, oh my gosh, I got Operation Army. now it's the biggest bragging point. And honestly, I mean, you're seeing more and more research around the fact that especially in luxury, if you look at just luxury shopping for Gen Alpha, you know, and Gen Z, they're shopping secondhand first. They're shopping secondhand first in luxury. The Gen Alpha is, if they're shopping for luxury, they're not going to the primary market. And so I think it's really changing everything. And if you ask my kids, if you say to my son, love your sneakers, he's going to say, thank you, I got them on eBay. He will brag about it. For him, it's much cooler to have gotten a deal on it. It makes you seem smarter that you found a way to get. And so it's just a totally different mindset. And the world's really evolving in that way. And in my opinion, we have a lot of really great conversations with a lot of the luxury brands. And they got to get on board. It's not going anywhere.
Exactly. They have to go. And we're so, and we know each other also. We've met through, you know, Stacey Burns and the Dealmaker Network, and they do an annual retail CEO influencer summit. And a couple years ago, the Z Suite was launched, which is, you know, influencers in the Gen Z generation. And one of the questions asked at the summit 2 years ago, Joanna Coles was the one who asked this question. She asked them, like, what are you wearing? What are you wearing? And it was such a mix, but almost every single one of them, male and female, it was something new and it was something out of their parents' closet.
Oh, very cool. That's very cool. I mean, honestly, my parents were not cool enough to the shopping closet. Dad was a geologist, and my mom stayed home with the 6 kids and made clothes. And they just, you know, honestly, I didn't have that. I didn't have the cool grandma that I was raiding her closet either. My parents and grandparents were amazingly cool, but like actual fashion taste was not their like focus. But I love that. That is so amazing. In fact, sometimes we'll have people come to Fashion File and they'll say, oh, this is my grandpa's watch. And we're like, do not sell that to us. Are you kidding me? You take that watch home. Thinking, you know, like legitimately, I love that story. And I hope that my kids don't say that. I hope my kids are going to want all my stuff because it's like, oh, this is mom.
I am sure they will. I am very sure that they will. Well, each year you also release this ultra luxury resale report. So what are some of the surprising takeaways that you can share from this year's report? And, you know, what should luxury brands be paying attention to this year and even into next?
I mean, it's one of those things that we've talked about and we've seen because this is our like 26 plus year in business. You know, we've been doing this a long time, started it, like I said, in 1999. And so it's honestly surprising and yet not surprising that just the ebb and flow of what becomes popular and what is, it's like hot and then it's not, and then it comes back. And you know, just yesterday I was walking someone from one of the brands we sell, and one of their team members from corporate walking through our inventory cage, and she was just blown away by just like this is a snapshot of just like history, and you see this in the resale report. Looking as we're looking at the data of what sells, and I was like, honestly, my gut always tells me, if you're looking around in this cage and you're like, that is the ugliest thing I'd ever seen, you put a pin in that because that was going to be cool. That's like the next hot thing. It's so interesting. And I wonder, we've talked a lot about, especially in our world, like we said, the Gen Alpha, who loves luxury for the same reason. And this is a thread we've seen in our resale report of a younger and younger buyer. When I was back in my day, there were young people like that were not buying luxury, didn't care, were trying to get it, didn't have the access. Now with resale, there's a lot more accessibility, which I believe is really producing an even more intense appetite for luxury at an early age. But what I think is happening, you know, is that a lot of these Gen Alpha, they don't have honestly the means. And so they're looking at Fashion File, and they're going to search our entire site by lowest price. They want something authentic. They want a luxury brand. And they're going to search our entire site by lowest price, and they're going to find a screaming deal on some little thing that everybody else has forgotten. And then that person is going to show that item on a TikTok video. Yeah. And then all their French and be like, oh my gosh, what is that? And they're, and it's again, some forgotten style of some forgotten brand that honestly was reselling us for us very, very cheaply. And then all of a sudden that gets picked up. And what we see, and you kind of see this in the report, the brands, after it gets picked up on resale and you see the resale prices going up and up and up because that item is becoming more popular, then the brands will reissue that very item. And then create kind of a new twist on that very style. And then that raises the value of the entire brand, including that piece. And we see that over and over again. And we've seen that this year in particular with several styles that kind of have that resurgence, which is just so cool. And again, I really do believe that's driven by that younger consumer who really has the appetite to be digging through our archives. It's so, you know, we have at any given time 40,000 items on our site and 81% is unique. That's a lot of product to be digging through, and they're able to really find these gems that are just unique and maybe hit a tone in 2020.
Well, I think it's also their form of expression. So a couple of things, like with Gen Alpha, being able to, you know, seek out brands that help express their form of identity and their, you know, style expression is really important to them. And then on the flip side, you know, for brands, it's so great that there's this opportunity for this entry point, right? For this new generation to get to know, you know, hold a Chanel bag for the first time or wear those shoes or have, you know, have that accessory.
Exactly. And I think you really nailed it there, because the reality that's so interesting is that, like, for that younger shopper, that Gen Alpha and honestly Gen Z, they don't want to wear what everybody else is wearing. Like, so the hot thing that just came out that everybody's wanting is kind of not necessarily what they're wanting to get, to be caring. They're wanting to show up in the party in something totally unique, you know, and that people are going to say, where did you get that? What is that? What am I looking at? So it really, and then they tend to be the ones, again, who are more technically savvy and who have that, you know, the stamina to go through and dig through, you know, all of the listings and find those truly unique pieces that are special, that are like really only not reselling well because they, you know, because they've been forgotten, because, you know, it's a great shape and it's actually so old that sometimes that it's actually become a more familiar and a style is more adjacent to something that's more current. So I think you're right on that fact that, you know, they want to be unique. And how do you do that? How do you wear something that nobody's wearing? You either buy something totally like off the runway, or you buy something that's vintage.
Yeah. Well, speaking of vintage, I want to go over to your book, The Book of Iconic Bags, right? Because we also recently launched the Book of Iconic Bags book. And talk, I mean, you clearly, when you talk, there is no question about your passion when it comes to this.
What a thrill.
And tell us why. Like, why was it important for you as a brand to document the handbag's cultural significance in this way?
I mean, honestly, it's almost like just been frustrating this entire time. You say 25 iconic bags. It's like been 25 plus years that we've been doing this. It's just kind of the perfect moment, because this is not an exaggeration. I'm not just saying this. Every day, I see things that come in here and I'm just like, that is so cool. What? And something that's so special. Like, when did they make that tiny little version of that bag? Or when did they do, you know, and so much, we see so much coming in here that is so special. And so normally it literally goes from like my closet to Fashion File to your closet. And it's kind of like a hidden thing. And for so many years, I said, I would love to be able to showcase. And obviously we tried this with social media, and we tried this with just, you know, putting out little spotlights on our website and, you know, in our academy, our blog, to put a spotlight on these items. But we're like, you know what? We really need to. And so it's kind of been like an obvious thing we've been talking about for decades. These books really need to have, you know, to be given a spotlight and a focus. And the word iconic is just thrown around a lot.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like, No, that's actually not iconic. And so what is iconic? And I was like, if anybody,
just define that for us, please.
People, we can talk about it. We can talk about it. Because iconic truly is timeless. Like, that is, if you're talking about a true icon, a representative of that brand for all times, it's not something that will fade. And so, like, we have, you know, all the time, I'll talk to folks in the press or just on social, people ask or are very curious about what is the hottest bad you're selling right now. And they want to hear about some trendy new bag that's like the new, you know, it bag. And at the end of the day, it's going to be those iconic shapes or the ones we sell the most of at any given time. And they're the Louis Vuitton Speedy. I say that to you and you know that shake. It pops into your head. But there have been like 75 variations, so many variations of that particular bag over the years. And so let's talk about that. And let's talk about like some of these variations. And let's see the picture of Audrey Hepburn carrying that bag back in the days, looking like just, you know, a princess. She's just amazing. And the fact that that bag is still cool today, it's really, when you think about the trend cycles, think about the trend cycles today. They last like a hot minute. Yeah, they're over. You know what I mean? But the fact that these shapes we're talking about literally were created in the 50s or 60s, and they are still popular and hot sellers today. How do you even do that? You know what I mean? Because the shape of the Louis Vuitton Speedy is exactly the same. You'll think about, there'll be cars like a Mustang or something that's like, you know, a Corvette. It's like, yeah, those cars have been popular for a long time. There's different styles, but it's not like the same body styles is popular. That original is gone, put to bed and not used again. And I was saying, this is the exact same shape that has been cool since the time when Audrey Hepburn's carrying it, when celebrities today are still carrying that same bag and oftentimes in different textiles or and something classic.
Yeah, well just to circle in on that, you know, Chanel, Louis Vuitton, they often come out as those cross-generational anchors in resale. I mean, what do you think gives these houses their enduring power and resonance?
They understand the value of their own brand, and so they're very concerned at all times. I love it. It sometimes is difficult in resale because, you know, they're so protective of their brand. They're so protective of distribution and how that brand looks in different spaces. And there was a Cartier lawsuit a while ago. They sued 10 something years ago. They sued a reseller. And at the end of the day, one of the issues in the lawsuit was just that the brand was making them look bad. You know, that Cartier cares about the packaging and presentation and of these beautiful bags, and that the way that this reseller was presenting themselves was just bad for the brand. That was just a part of the, and so you think about like how many years, you know, they don't distribute it. I mean, they could be selling everywhere. They, you know, they are very careful about what department stores they even will partner up with and allow to sell their product. Even Chanel Beauty isn't available everywhere. They're very particular about what. And so why do they care about that distribution? They care about the distribution because they care about their brand representation over time. And so they're just very protective of it. And at the end of the day, I think they make decisions based on, if we do this thing, will it hurt that, you know, the reputation of that brand, even that style? And so things like the fact that the Louis Vuitton Speedy, the Chanel flap, those items never go on sale. Like Black Friday, good luck. There's not a sale for that. And so like, why are they doing that? Because they're saying, why would this ever go on sales? This is not that, you know, and I think that says a lot about the brand, of that brand value. And it really helps that item to, in fact, the opposite is true, as you know, which is, that Louis Vuitton Speedy or that Chanel Classic flap is not going on sale ever. And in fact, it will 100% be raised in price this year.
At least one.
The price of that item is going to go up this year. What does that say about that item? What is the brand saying about that? And the fact that that item can handle the pricing, that it's not like people stop buying it when that happens.
Yeah.
Rebuy it and it becomes, you know, popular.
Speaking of staying power, there's a few things that Fashion File is doing, I think, to establish its own staying power. Partnerships, cultural influence, new offerings, innovation. Talk to us a little bit about Nicole Richie and a brand ambassador that brings nostalgia, sustainability, advocacy, cultural relevance, kind of all at once. You know, yeah. What makes her the right fit for this moment in Fashion File's journey?
I mean, I hope this is just like, it makes my heart like so happy, because whenever people talk to us about Nicole Richie, they're like, that makes all the sense. Like,
I mean, she's so just effortlessly cool.
She's so effortlessly cool. And she is a true fan of the products that we sell. And she's also a true fan of vintage.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of the best shapes and the best styles that we love that are today by Gen Z and Gen Alpha considered vintage, she was the one who made them cool back when they first came out.
Yeah.
And so it's the motorcycle, like Balenciaga, the whole like motorcycle bag has got like a whole like comeback. She did that on the first rounds. She was the it girl who like made that cool. And so, I mean, when we think about, you know, at Fashion File, we try to, our like vision that we have like up on our board or whatever is that we're building the best brand that buying and selling luxury in the world. We're trying to build the best brand doing what we're doing. We're not trying to build the best company, resale company. There's a lot of great resale companies out there, but we know that our customers, people who love what we sell and what we buy, they love brands. They want to make it loyal to a brand, and they'll fall in love with the brand and they'll stick with that brand. And so we said, we want to build a brand that, you know, that people want to stick with. And one thing that luxury brands do is luxury brands have spokespeople. They've got like their ambassador for the season. They'll have their for the season. And we said, we should have that too. And then how can we make sure and not just like get who we can get, but that we really have partners that make sense for our brand. And Nicole Richie is like, just so perfect for all of those reasons that I said. Not only is she like, you know, just as cool today, if not cooler than she was back in the day, but the fact that she legitimately made some of those most popular bags that are having a comeback today, she made them cool in the first place. And then she's now our ambassador. It's truly like a dream come true.
Yeah. I mean, I just want to hang out with her. So let's just put that on the record just in case. Like, she's so cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's so awesome because we're able to like we talk about some of her, you know, those bags, and this is the book.
There it is. We need to see that book. Oh, that's a beautiful. Yeah. So cool. Yeah, like, I need that on my coffee table. I love it.
Like, if you look at, you know, in this book, Nicole Richie is like, these are the bags that she was carrying, bags that she made popular. And so it's like, when you get her photo as the original and yet her photo today, because it's also like just as cool, it just is like a perfect, you know, I don't know. It's a full circle. And with Fashion File, like, circularity is so important. So it's so authentic. So I love it.
Yeah. Well, you're doing a lot of innovative things. I mean, there's like partnering with Nicole Richie. It's putting out that book. And you also just launched your investment protection collection, starting with the new the Renew bag cleaning kit. And you know, obviously you've been in this for a couple decades now, and so you really understand the consumer and what they need. Tell us a little bit about this new offering and why it's an important extension to your brand.
I mean, it's honestly, it's almost out of necessity, in that people will constantly, daily DM, message, call us and say, help, I got a pen mark on my bag, what can I do? You know, and we consider everything that we sell as an investment, meaning some of the items that you buy from us, you could literally hold on to and sell for more money later down the road. But everything you buy from us will be worth something eventually, should you need or want to sell it. And so you want to protect that investment. And every day we get phone calls for saying, I don't know what to put on, you know, I want to clean or condition a leather Chanel flap, lambskin. That lambskin is delicate. And think about if you didn't moisturize your face for 10 years, you know, what would it, the horror.
Well, can I just tell you that? Because I was at a talk yesterday at a conference, and Sunny from The View was on, and we didn't realize that one of the hosts on it is 82 years old. The whole audience was like, "What?" And she was like, "Because she moisturizes every day."
Right. And literally whatever she is doing to her face and the results of that face, that literally happens. We sell see th this in a Chanel flap where the quilting kind of like wilts. It kind of dulls a little, honestly, because many of the flaps we have are 10 plus years old. My own Chanel flap that I carry every day is over 10 years old. You can't tell because I keep care of it. And so there's things you can do to protect your pro those props you're that you're buying from us, and people want to know. And so we're basically said to ourselves, if there's something you need to protect your investment, we should be a one-stop shop. People are every day asking us, where do we go? We should be able to just offer it to them. You know what I mean? It's clear that it's me. So it's really exciting because this isn't like hard for us because we every single day we clean and condition and have a full restoration department fashion file. We know the products to use. We use products we have developed ourselves and are currently always working on finding new and developing new products for our own internal purposes. So why not share those?
I love that. And you just make it that extension easy. But I also think there's so many different ways a consumer is thinking of your company as a partner to them when it comes to resale, not just a company that's selling them products. They're trusting your curation. You know, you're writing this book, so you're understanding their expertise in this. Now you're giving them things to elongate the lifetime of their products. So I think it's really smart. And you also have Parker & West, right? Your private jewelry label. Feels like a bold but natural extension as well. How do you envision that complementing your core business in luxury resale?
Well, Parker West is our estate jewelry brand, and the way that we look at that is that every day we're in literally amazing closets. We're in one of our PCR private client relations team members in New York was at this one of our clients' homes who owns an entire townhouse next to their townhouse because that's their closet. They've both been,
I mean, let's talk about this. I need pictures.
it's mind blowing. In those same closets, we want to buy. We only buy like 100 brands across the handbag, fine jewelry, watch categories. But we go into these people's closets and they have amazing jewelry that is unbranded or from brands that are tiny little brands that are not recognizable. But they're truly exceptional pieces, amazing stones and the most precious metals. And honestly, it's very difficult for to shop resale in the cat in estate jewelry because it's there is so much of it, and it's literally, I hate to use this word, this the our fine jewelry department will kill me for saying this, but it's like a bottom pit of estate jewelry when you look at just like go to eBay, go to any of your favorite resale shops that sell unbranded, and it's just very difficult to shop. And so we said at Fashion File, we're going to do the same thing we do with our luxury brands with Tiffany and Cartier and Harry Winston, and we're going to create an estate brand called Parker & West, and we are going to do what we do with luxury across Fashion File already and just curate the best pieces, the best truly exceptional stones and really interesting pieces, and so that we can fill out, fill this need that people have. Number one, the service of we go into this person's house and she's like, "Well, I've got this amazing tennis bracelet or this, this diamond choker, and it's not Cartier." And we're like, "Well, okay, we don't take it, but maybe we should, And so now we do accept it. And then for the customer, he was saying, "Yeah, I don't actually. I want a truly exceptional luxury piece to wear to my wedding, and if it's Cartier, and it's a." But if you've got something else special that's platinum and diamond and fits the bill, then like let me look at that too. And so that's what Parker & West does is like go to the best closets, curate the best collection, make it easy to shop estate like it's never been before. So we're really excited about it.
Like I'm just sitting here wanting to shop, so we're just going to talk about that. And I feel like I'm embracing jewelry more in my life too, so I love this. Well, let's switch over to omni-channel growth in your future, right? 2024 marked like your most profitable year, 60% of the growth attributed to physical retail and wholesale. you know, what is driving the appetite, you think, for in-person resale, right? You talked about Gen Z, they will treasure hunt and they will find that thing, and you have a robust catalog that they want access to, but you're also seeing tremendous growth from physical. So can you talk a little bit about that? And then also you're opening a flagship authentication center and store in LA. Did that open already?
No, it's October. It's opening.
Our favorite, which is like already here almost.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, the whole thing is interesting because a lot of times when I talk to people, I mean, retail is the opposite of dead. Just FYI, like, yeah. I cannot believe the foot traffic in the centers we're in. And again, you talk about the growth that we're already seeing in not only retail, when we look at our stores that are in like shopping centers and things like that, but in our flagship. I'm in an authentication center right now in San Diego.
Okay.
But in the front of our authentication center, we have a beautiful store, which is, we're in the middle of an industrial park. We're not in a popular shopping retail destination, nor are we in a luxury epicenter in Carlsbad. But the foot traffic we get and the sales in this one particular location alone, it's really incredible. I think there's a huge appetite, especially in luxury, where some people just want to try it on. They just want to put it on their shoulder. They want to see how it sits crossbody. They want to see if their phone is going to fit in that zipper. They want to see what the hairline scratches look like. And it's hilarious because sometimes I think when I tell people these stories, they imagine these are little old people who haven't like gotten with the times and are shopping online. But the truth is, young people love in-store shopping. Like, my kid's favorite store is a store called Second Street, which I actually really love that story. There's thousands of, it's a little thrift store. It's from Japan, so it's very cool. They're all over the country. But kids love to go to, you know, shopping in thrift stores, consignment stores, all that. Gen Alpha and Gen Z, they are shopping physical retail, especially pre-owned, I would say more than online. I put it out there to say, they're shopping online, but I would put money on, and I'm not seeing the research yet to come out, but I think when you say, where are they finding, they're going to Buffalo Exchange, they're going to all these little cute, cool resale shops, and they're shopping online. And so why would we give up? Why would we not participate and be where they are? We want to be all of the above. So if you want to be shopping in your pajamas at, you know, 7 p.m. on a Sunday night, cool, we're here for you. And if that's the only way you love to shop, great. But for so many people now who shop because they prefer it that way. Some people shop that way because it's entertainment. It's like, I've been working all day. I've got nothing to do on the weekend. Let's go hit some stores. Like, great. For the people who just want it, like that are saying, hey, listen, you know what? $2,000 may be not a lot of money for the Birkin people out there, but it's a lot of money to me. I want to see it in real life. This is my one, you know, they want to actually see it. And so we want to be there for them. So we're really trying to be in every market that we can and give people the possibility. It's strange. We literally have customers. We have, again, massive inventory online. All of our inventory, the inventory that we have sitting in our Carlsbad store. This is our authentication store. We also have a store in Carlsbad or in our Irvine store. That inventory is online. You could buy it from home. You don't have to go into that store. But we have customers who know us, who come back.
I mean, I like to go in person. I like the treasure hunt of it. I want to try it on, you know, and because it's a one of a kind and it's resale too, for me, I have to with the fit. And, you know, there's certain brands you know more than others, but there's the fun of that. And there's the community aspect of that too. And I think, you know, especially this younger generation that's craving that because they're so living life behind the screen. I think it's a fun way of discovery together. But as you look at the future, you know, where do you see the biggest opportunities for innovation in luxury retail? You know, is it the evolution of the store? Is it technology? Is it global expansion, consumer education, a mix of it?
Yeah, I think we haven't seen, you know, anything yet as far as what true omnichannel will look like in the future. We're getting there, and some people are better than others, but the ability, again, to seamlessly interact across all the different channels. You know, I had the experience of, you know, I went into a Uniqlo store, which, you know, and I loved the experience where you just like got some little like t-shirts to go under, you know, jackets and stuff like that, just little plain t-shirts. And the experience is like so easy. You throw those things in that little magical, you know, whatever space on the counter, and it's ringing it up with a some magical like online technology that's ringing it up and taking the sensors, turning off the sensors and tallies it up. And it's this totally seamless experience of no sales associate involved. And then I realized as I left that one of the sizes I got was wrong. I just left and went back in, and the ability to make that return exchange just mm-hmm. size for size was so annoying and so long. Like, they thought through that first process so easily, and then just a simple return was actually kind of a nightmare and took their effort. And so
I'd say a key part, decaying to estimate that.
We're all learning, like, and how could that experience be better? And what, you know, and so at Fashion Pod, we did the same thing. It's like, how can we make sure that people that are shopping with us online or in store are shopping with us online almost always, in one way or the other, even if it's just the fact that they're coming into our store and they have shopped online. This is strange, but literally people will come into our store. Some people, for whatever reason, want a sales associate to help them through the process, and they'll have done the research and they'll have pulled like five items, and then they're going to come in and they want to talk it through with the sales associate. Mm-hmm. And it gives me a second opinion. Again, this is not just a $20 purchase. Our average sale price is $2,000. And so some people just want a second opinion, want to know a little bit more. A lot of people want extra photos. We have an entire team here that's just there saying, if people want an extra measurement, if people need an extra photo, if people want a video, we need to be there to produce that.
Absolutely. It's luxury. It's a luxury experience at the end of the day, and it has to be. It's like that book, I have it here, Unreasonable Hospitality. I mean, I think you have to have that mindset.
Absolutely. Is that convenient? No, it's not convenient at all. But like, for the shoppers who's finding us from and following us from Biloxi, Mississippi, she may never get the opportunity to come into our stores or our flagships. What can we do to give her the same level of service that we do online that we do in store? And that's one of the ways you're going to be able to talk through. This is a crazy stat, Melissa. It's and we've really tried to learn a lot more, but for every out of every two purchases that comes from Fashion Vault, somebody reaches out to a Fashion Vault team member for one part of it. One out of every two purchases, which is wild. That is so much. And a lot of companies are saying, we don't want you to reach out. So how do we minimize that? What can we do to minimize that?
That's the worst experience. I have to go to chat and nobody's online and they're not going to message me back. And I don't know if they are. But I think that what you're talking about is value. You know, people are going to you and they're paying for more than just a product. They're paying for the value that you're providing them.
If they know that they're looking at three bags and they're like, I really like this, but it says there's hairline scratches and I can't really see. And they know that you can make a phone call and within minutes, we're going to send them a video in the front of those hairline scratches. Honestly, that person becomes so loyal. They tell their friends and they're going nowhere else. And so it's like, that is a luxury experience. And so I love that whole idea of, like, you know, what we're talking about. We're not talking about trying to build the most inefficient or efficiencies across the board. We're saying, how can we create and elevate this experience so that the customer is really getting the best service level they can? At the end of the day, we really are, you know, a service company. We're providing the service of, you know, helping people to sell the beautiful, you know, investments they made over time, and then helping other people to make those purchases, which is not as easy when you're shopping for luxury, and especially not for resale luxury.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, I think that you've clearly shown your passion, your expertise in all of this, and how you're so forward thinking about Fashion File and, you know, your consumer and, you know, the longevity continuous evolution, right, of your company in this space of resale and being a leader in that. And so before we wrap up, I'm going to ask you a few rapid fire questions. Number one, do you dress from the top down or from the bottom up when you pick your pieces?
The thing is, I kind of do a mix because I like always like having one really like special item. So if I love a long skirt. And so I have some really cool, interesting long skirts. And if I have like something that's like, whoa, that's a lot of pleats and that's a really interesting bubble or something, then I'll keep the top really slim and really simple, you know, and so I kind of like, but if I've got like this, where I've got like a high collar and a lot of work where I'm in the bottom is going to be very understated. So I kind of mix it up, but it's always like based on, ooh, I feel like wearing that like cool thing. And it's always like a kind of attention grabber, and I'll keep the other piece moderate, modest, simple.
Yeah. Okay. I love that. And then, I mean, you are so well versed in every brand and luxury that exists. What are your top go-to on a personal level?
I mean, I love Chanel. I hate to even say this because it's like so, it's like what you're going to, what you would guess. So I hate to be so predictable, but I'm a true fan of the heritage and the history and the story. And you really can't beat like the Chanel, the Louis Vuitton, and Hermes for all of that. The fact that literally all three of those brands, and it's really hardly, there's not very many other brands from that category where their true iconic styles just don't ever go down in resale price. Like that is so interesting and like really should be studied by brand builders in every category. I support those brands personally as a shopper, but I also just love studying like how they've done that, you know, and really looking at how they've been able to, you know, partner with interesting people. You know, I think Louis Vuitton's partnership with Marc Jacobs in the 90s, that was revolutionary, changed handbag culture for all the brands, you know, and then Chanel working with, you know, interesting creators like, Pharrell Williams or something that's kind of like out of the box at the time seemed very interesting and really keeps it modern. So this is my top three.
I love it. Well, I appreciate you sharing all of that with us. And then my last rapid fire question, if you could pick a word, how would you describe, or it could be three, how would you describe that feeling you feel when you have just that right outfit on? Like, what's the one way you would describe that feeling you have?
I do feel like what you wear can be like an armor, mm-hmm. In that I just feel confident. And so from right at the bat, what you don't want, and we've all had this feeling, is you show up somewhere and you're wearing something that does the opposite.
Yeah.
You've all put something on and you're like, why am I wearing this? I like feels like this is not.
Because it evokes a mood, you know, and.
For whatever reason, we all know that feeling. And there's the opposite where I need to. We all have moments of, you know, where our confidence is lacking or we just want to really put our best foot forward and need time to be ready to step forward in a way that is, you know, we're presenting our best selves and that we feel sharp and, you know, like we're, again, like we are representing who we are from a strong position. And I find and I think it's part of maturity. Like I know my style and I know now there's certain things I know. I just, I'm not doing that. Like, cause that, if I try to wear that other thing, there's a certain length of, like I said, I love a long skirt. There's a certain length of skirt. No, if I put it on, it's just that length of skirt, not for me and other people can whatever. And for me, I know right now I'm going to the whole day. I'm like, why am I wearing this? Heaven forbid it's like on video and I'm just like, oh my gosh, you know, I just,
yeah,
not. And then, oh man, a long pencil. Oh, I could rule the world in that thing. You know, like I love it. I feel so great. And yeah.
I love that. It's true. It evokes such energy when you're in those pieces that's why they're investments too, not just for the resale part of it, but for what I think it brings you as an individual. But thank you so much for spending the time with us today, Sarah. I think, you know, your passion, like I've said a couple times during this segment, is so evident. And I love to see what you continue to do, the evolution you've made since 1999 as an eBay storefront to today with physical locations and, you know, being a leader when it comes to buying and selling ultra luxury handbags and accessories across the country and an office in Tokyo. So thank you so much for being on. Again, everybody, this is Sarah Davis. She's the founder and president of Fashion File. And so, you know, whether it's online or in store, you need to check the brand out if you haven't yet.
Thank you so much also for having me, for thanking me. Appreciate it.